buy or sell time. All right, so I'm watching the game last night. Nuggets look good, 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 good. And then it just slipped away. Strange minutes. I'm not blaming David Adelman, but I already kind of said my piece on that. Buy or sell that the Nuggets are a contender. They can win a championship this year. And I am buying it as rather than sell it because I don't feel like we just haven't seen this team together. This is David Adelman's first year. And he has been met with one of the most crazy starts to his career, with Joker being down so many, almost a month, Aaron Gordon being out for quite a while, Christian Brown being out for quite a while, Cam Johnson out for quite a while, Jonas Valanciunas out for quite a while, now Peyton Watson's out for quite a while. It's been quite a while since we've seen this group together. So to be fair, the design was, man, you just got deeper with the moves you made in the offseason. We haven't seen any of that play out. The depth has been elevated to starting and more minutes coming off the bench out of necessity because of all the major injuries to their starting lineup. And surprisingly, it's been Jamal Murray, knocking on wood, that stayed healthy. So I'm buying it. Yeah, it's going to be tough. Beating the Thunder. I'm buying their contender. Doesn't mean I'm buying their winning. I think they're a contender.
I thought you were asking that rhetorically.
What?
I thought it was a rhetorical question. Like, are they a contender and everybody, you know?
Well, I'm not asking you.
Yes.
I don't ask, like, you. What would you know? Name three players in the NBA. I'm not asking you if that's your... Are you sad that I didn't ask you buy or sell on that one?
No, I was assuming that you were asking it, you know, assuming that everybody would say yes because the Nuggets are so talented.
No, I don't assume everyone would say yes. The hooligans that watch the Nuggets, I know you don't because Star Wars was on, they're also like me. We're going, this is a good team where you just haven't had the pieces together. I don't know where are you going with this? Where are you going with this? What are we doing here? What was it? What are you saying?
I'm saying that the Nuggets are so full of talent.
Based on your vast knowledge.
It's tough for you. I didn't think that you'd be second-guessing them this much.
They just lost to Cleveland. They've lost a lot of games.
You lose a lot of games.
Yeah,
60%
the Thunder winning a lot of games.
You win 60% of your games, you're in the playoffs.
That doesn't mean anything. Going to the playoffs doesn't mean anything. This is the NBA. This isn't, you know, the New England Patriots can play nobody, go to the playoffs, can play nobody, and then go to the Super Bowl. The NBA, you get found out quickly. At a best of seven, you find the best players, or you find the best teams. There's no mistakes when it comes to the NBA.
Then why have 82 games?
Because it always comes down to the wire. Why have 82 games in hockey? You're a hockey fan. What's wrong with you want less games? I'm sorry, basketball fans hate this argument, by the way. So do hockey fans. Why have 82 games? Do you not love watching the Avalanche play hockey? Do you not love watching the Nuggets play basketball? That's why. Like, reduce it to 62. Why? Every other night, I get to watch the Nuggets and the Avs for several months if we reduce that. So, you know, why have 82 games? Because more often than not, it comes down to the final four games of the season to establish seeding.
And if there were 70 games, it would come down to the final four or five games.
Okay, Mr. I'm a capitalist, or I don't know what you are. Who knows? You go tell the owners to forego money for 5 to 10 home games a year. Yeah, I'm sure they'll go right along with you.
I'm not saying that they're going to.
They will never do that.
I'm just saying that the season's a little long. I mean, it's not baseball long. Baseball is just ridiculous.
You know what this show is, right? Like, this is a sports show. So when you're wanting the season to end faster, it means you're wanting the sports to be done. So why, like, I know you want to get back to putting together the Death Star 9 and see what happens with Tony Stark and stuff. But sports fans that listen to the show don't wish for 72 games. They don't wish for 62 games. They enjoy from October. We watch basketball and hockey until June. Yeah, It's amazing. So, I don't know. It's not a little long. It's not. It's a perfect time. In fact, it is the most perfect thing that's ever existed. 82 games in the regular season is the most perfect thing that's ever existed. One of them. Jesus being number one. And then an 82-game season in the NBA. You're welcome. Keep it
up,
Mike.
I would actually argue that below that would be the 16-game NFL season, which is better than 17. I mean, I love more football, but 16 just fit right.
What are you going to do with the extra time? What are you going to do? 17 games is perfect. More games. Yeah, give us more. Give me 20. I want 20.
If you're going to have 20, you're going to have like 12 extra people on the roster, and you're going to have three bye weeks.
I'm just saying, like, not everybody that listens to the show is in a hurry for sports season to be over. Like you. So what? You got to go. You got to go. You want to get back to Legos. I get that, but I don't. I sports. So I watched the Nuggets last night. You know what I'm watching tonight? You know what I'm watching tonight, Mike? The Rams. More basketball. Next buy or sell. Will the Rams finish above 500 under Ali Farouk Manesh's first year? They're 13-10, KFKA. Not everybody gets that. Thanks, Mike. They got Air Force tonight. They should win that game. They have Wyoming on Valentine's Day. Nothing says love is in the air like another border war. The Rams were not good in the Cowboys game. UNLV, they did beat earlier in the season. Maybe they can win that. I don't see them beating San Diego State. They're 13-10. So, okay, let's just say they get to 14-10. Do they beat Wyoming second time around? Maybe. It's hard to beat a team twice. Let's say they go 15-10. I'm not gonna. They don't beat UNLV at Vegas, so they're 15-11. San Diego State, no, even though it's at home, so they're 15-12. Fresno State, it's not great, but I mean they lost to them 79-69. Let's give it to them. 16-12. San Jose State, there you go. 17. Yeah, they're going to win. Yeah. I'll buy that. Do you have any weird little, is that rhetorical? Was it rhetorical? I'm coming in with that. Just light my fire sometimes.
I wasn't trying to light your fire.
Well, I didn't know what you meant. Like, buy or sell is buy or sell. Well, am I buying this or selling this? And I have to ask myself the question because you don't watch any other sport other than the Broncos.
I was saying that the Nuggets have gone this far with this many injuries. I was thinking that maybe you were asking it rhetorically, or were going to ask it rhetorically.
Why are you
saying this is how good the Nuggets are with all these injuries? When they get back to full health, of course they're going to be a contender.
Why are you complicating it? Why are you complicating this? You're complicating this. Here's another one. Can you stay with me? Are you paying attention? Stop looking at the computer. Stop looking up Star Wars sequels. Stop doing it. I know what you're doing. Google, will Darth Vader come back? I hope so. I'm sorry. You make me mad, so I have to make fun of you. Buy or sell. The Bears are going to win the Big Sky Conference tournament. 6 games remaining. I'm asking you this because you pay attention to the Bears. Buy or sell?
Pass.
You didn't hear what I asked, did you?
No. You said, are the Bears going to win the Big Sky tournament? And I don't want to answer that.
Yes or no? Buy or sell? Stand for something, Mike.
I don't want to answer that because the answer is going to be
dude,
no.
What would Loki and Yoda do in this situation? If they are facing down Captain Kurt Cobain and they have to defeat him in order to restore the gemstones to planet Galactica, what would they do?
That's like 5 different things right there. You're talking about Battlestar Galactica. You're talking about Star Wars.
Yeah.
You had a Marvel mention.
Loki.
What was the other one?
Yoda.
Kurt Cobain and then
Captain Kurt Cobain.
Well, it was Yoda and somebody else.
What would they do? They'd stand. If I ask Yoda, who I'm sure you love, buy or sell something, he's answering. He's not passing. It's not the Yoda way. How would he have defeated Captain Kirk if that was how he operated?
Oh, you mentioned Loki. That's right.
How would that have happened?
Loki would have betrayed Yoda.
How would Spock have brought down Darth Vader if he just didn't answer questions? He wouldn't have. Wouldn't have happened. Blown up the Death Star.
Yoda would have shown a bunch of metaphors to Luke, and then Luke would have been like,
"We got a break." 16 minutes after the hour. Hugh Millen coming up next. He follows the Seattle Seahawks. He does radio over in Seattle. So, I got to ask him about Kenneth Walker. Kenneth Walker coming to Denver? Or the Seahawks saying, back up, don't touch. We'll be right back.
For Hall of Fame Preps Talk, listen to Coach Speak. Weekdays at 10 at Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Hey, this is Warren Jackson, former CSU wide receiver, and you're listening to the whole show on KFK.
Twenty-two minutes after the 1 o'clock hour, welcome back into the whole show, powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado. Joining me now on our First Advantage Hotline, great friend of the show's, former NFL quarterback, covering the football analyst following the Seattle Seahawks for KJR AM Radio in Seattle, the one and only Hugh Millen. Hugh, thanks so much, man. Always look forward to catching up with you, my friend.
Always great to be with you, Brady.
All right, man. So the Seahawks get it done. They win 29-13. I got to just ask, right at the beginning of the season, did you pick this team to win the Super Bowl, Hugh?
No, I certainly did not. I think there was too many questions going into it. I think that for the defensive part, you know, which was the strength of the team, one thing you could point out is Mike McDonald, when he was the defensive coordinator for the first time with Baltimore in 2022, about halfway through the season, they were in the low to mid-20s in all the important defensive statistics. Then for the second half of that season, again, that's year one, he had come from Michigan. The second half of that season, they were number one in the NFL in terms of defensive points allowed. Then his second year in Baltimore, which was 2023, The Ravens throw the triple crown. They lead the NFL in fewest points, most turnovers, and most sacks. Well, that got him the Seahawks job. Halfway through the 2024 season, if you stop there and you say, okay, this is year one, compare it to year one with the Ravens, it looked like a carbon copy. The Seahawks were right around 22 to 23, 24 in like points, yards, etc. And then for the second half of the year, in some metrics, they were either one or number two in defense for the second half of the year. Well, they carried that over for this year, and they got it done with probably the most important defensive statistics. They were number one in the NFL, fewest points allowed in his second year. They're the second youngest team in the NFL. They've got a 28-year-old quarterback. They've got $77 million in cap, which is the top three or four best. So there's a lot to be appreciative for a Seahawks fan.
Hugh Millen joining us. On the defensive side, I mean, we saw that on full display in the Super Bowl, but Drake May just looked absolutely lost. There were so many layers to that defense. What is it about Mike McDaniel's defense that just has quarterbacks absolutely stumped?
Yeah, Mike McDonald, sure. Yeah, I would say, first of all, he has a complicated array of coverages and blitz schemes and what have you, and he doesn't blitz often, but there's a analytics statistic sabermetricians use. They say expected points added. That's a new thing, and you can Google it. I've run correlation numbers. It correlates to winning. And the Seahawks, while they were about 25th in the league in terms of their blitz, they were number one in the league in terms of expected points added defensively when they did blitz. So they were very effective. They've got a creative way of doing zone blitzes where they will only rush four or five guys, and but they'll play zone behind it, but they'll play a relatively complicated scheme behind it. Let me give you an example. In the Super Bowl, when you study Mike Vrabel, who of course was an understudy to Bill Belichick, when they do zone pressures and they had up their blitz rate from 27% in the regular season to 41% in the postseason. This is, I'm talking about the Patriots to make a contrast. When they rush the five guys and play zone behind it, they play three deep and three under. Some teams call that a box car, because when you go to Vegas and you look at a dice, you know, what does a six look like? There's two rows of three, right? And so that three deep, three under, what that does, that allows free access to the widest receivers. The receivers close to the sideline, nobody's bumping them. They can just run up the field, and the corner on top of them has the deep route. There's three underneath, so there's all kinds of holes. There's seam routes for the slot receivers. Having gone against both, then I'm going to give you the next one. I think that three deep, three under is easier to dissect. The Seahawks, by contrast, they don't play the three deep, three under when they zone blitz. They rush five guys, which constitutes technically a blitz, because anything more than four is a blitz. But they will play a hybrid coverage behind it, where it's either two deep or four deep, depending on the release of the widest receiver. Does the widest receiver go vertical? What does the slot receiver do? If he goes to the flat, some people, coaches call this a catch technique or palms technique, what have you, the corner will trigger down into the flat and the safety will be high over the top. If both the slot and the widest receivers go vertical, then the corners sink and it becomes a four deep. So it's really a hybrid, a pattern matching coverage that's either a four deep and two under, or two deep and four under, and it can also be one or the other on either half of the field based on the release of the receivers on that half of the field. So DeMarcus Lawrence, who had played for the Cowboys for 12 years, he gets here and he says, you need a PhD in football to be able to understand this. And yet, so he's taken these complex schemes, but he's a wonderful teacher, talking about Mike McDonald, the Seahawks head coach. He knows exactly what they can handle, what they can't. There was a game against Tampa Bay where he said, hey, we threw too much at them. And also a game against the Rams where they threw too much at him. So he's learned some lessons a couple times, but he makes his adjustments. But that's really the key about it, from a scheme standpoint of Mike McDonald. Everybody is tied together. They play zone 80.4% of the downs. Four out of five, they're playing zone. If you can play man-to-man great, because some people call that cat defense. Hey, you know, my cat's got your cat. If your cat can cover their cat, then good for you. You've got really good cover corners and cover safeties, and you're probably going to play good defense. But I personally am more impressed when I throw on a tape and I see a zone defense and they are tied together. You played foosball, Brady, right? You know when you do the foosball deals and all three guys in the row or all five guys in the row are tied together because they're on a foosball stick. Like the Seahawks it's like a foosball defense.
Interesting.
They are so tied together. They know where their help is, to the inside, to the outside, behind you, in front of you. And so, complex schemes, but taught by a master teacher.
How long does it take to? I mean, because obviously they were a pretty good team last year, and then this year you really saw it as the season went along, and especially in the postseason, they had it perfected. How long does it take, you know, new guys coming to this team, rookies on this team, young guys coming in to learn this process?
Well, first of all, he's been a defensive coordinator at three places. His first opportunity was at University of Michigan in 2021. The Wolverines had been 94th in scoring defense in the country the year before, where they're almost 35 points a game allowed. He got in 1 year, he got him to 17 points. He went from 94th to 7th. That's when big brother John Harbaugh said to little brother Jim Haw, the head coach of Michigan, "Hey, little brother, sorry, I need him back," because he had been a linebacker coach with the Ravens prior. So he's a one-year stop at Michigan. I just told you what he did there. And then we discussed what he did. He had 2 years as a defense coordinator at Baltimore. It took a half a season in year one. And then it was literally duplicated in year one with the Seahawks. So my answer would be, at the college ranks, you know, he proved he could do it in a year. Over the course of his first full year. At the professional ranks, he proved that, hey, year one, you're not going to be very good through the first 8 or 9 games. You're going to be below the median. But in the second half of year one, you're going to be elite. And then in year two, you're going to be not just elite, you're going to be the best. And he did that at Baltimore, and he's done that at Seattle. I don't know if the term genius should be used for football coaches. Maybe we reserve that for Isaac Newton. You know, like he invented calculus, right? Like maybe we shouldn't say, but if we can say genius, or at least we can say brilliant, right, Brady? We can agree what that's
sure.
That's a fair term. This guy, if not a genius, he's brilliant.
I mean, even just this small sample size of listening to you talk about this defense seems brilliant to me. And obviously, you're seeing, you know, what Drake May was seeing or what he wasn't seeing on the field Sunday, especially, was it was miraculous. I mean, the broadcast, Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth talking about that. So many different layers. It's phenomenal to see this defense. How about on the offensive side?
Yeah,
what a story.
But just one more take on the defense, because from the scheme, because you mentioned the Super Bowl specifically, the Seahawks thought that they had something with the Patriots offensive line and their protection schemes. And keep in mind now, that was an offense coordinated by Josh McDaniel, who has 6 Super Bowl rings. Every single Super Bowl ring that Tom Brady has as a Patriot, Josh McDaniel was on the Patriots staff. And so Mike McDonald absolutely pantsed Josh McDaniel. And one of the things is they blitzed at a higher rate.
Yeah.
They had 10 plays where they brought one defensive back or more. That's unusual for Seattle. Here was the stat line for Drake May on those 10 plays. 5 for 10, 22 yards, 1 interception, 1 sack, and a 17 passer rating. That's 1.7. 17 passer rating. So you know, it's just little, you know, when you kind of, you know, go granular on the performance of the defense, you have that type of game plan and execution by the Seahawks.
Well, yeah, and even you talk about the cat defense too. Even the one-on-one stuff, adding more blitzes was just like cherry on top almost. But like Derek Hall just had Will Campbell. Yeah, just had it. Oh my gosh, I mean, that dude's probably still hurting today. Just blew him up.
Well, I tell you, Brady, if he had been the 4th overall pick of the Broncos, for you, and you're doing sports radio, or if he was the 4th overall pick for the Seahawks, and I'm doing Seahawks sports radio, and we had to, we'd be drinking brown liquor, watching Will Campbell on the game tape. Look, there's obviously room for improvement for him. He's just a rookie, but he was the 4th overall pick. They just said, "You're our left tackle." There was some question about his arm length or what have you. Whatever his arm length, I don't know. You could staple tennis rackets to him. His feet were not working in that game, and we'd be really chagrined right now. You know, now look, Sam Darnold improved, so I don't want to say Will Campbell's a bust. But that's an example where you make the wrong pick at the wrong place and can really set back your football team.
Well, Hugh, you being a quarterback, let's talk about Sam Darnold, man. What a journey it's been. I mean, the going from the top of the top, you know, he was a number two draft pick. He goes to the Jets.
Was he three?
Okay. And then you have all those guys in that draft class. You have Baker Mayfield. You have Lamar Jackson. You have Josh Allen. He wins a Super Bowl before any of them. We've got that crazy, you know, audio from him playing the Patriots, saying, "I'm seeing ghosts out there." He had not hit a hard time living that one down. I think he finally did. He had a great season with Minnesota. Then things kind of crumbled once they hit the playoffs. What can you tell me just about Sam Darnold, like who he is as a guy, but also his journey to get here?
Well, I've met him a few times, had some conversations with him. I've watched every single play, studied every play this year, and then I studied every play from the Vikings. So I've got some thoughts about him. Let me start, and Brady, I'm not picking on you. I'm picking on all the people that have talked about this, the ghost, okay? And I understand that it gets people attention. That's weird. Like, whoa, I'm seeing ghosts. Do you have terminology in your radio station when you talk to your producer? Like, is there certain things like, okay, what's the bumper music?
It's mostly don't screw it up like you did yesterday. That's the terminology that we use here.
But
honestly,
tell me a term that you use that is specific to your industry that you use with your producers or your other hosts or whatever, that is just kind of the vernacular, the jargon, the lexicon of radio behind the scenes. Any term.
Wow, putting me on. Michael, what are some terms that we use? Come on, help me out, Mike.
I mean, there's liner.
Yeah,
you have a bunch
liner.
Of liners.
Liner. Imaging, sure.
Liner.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So my point in saying that, everybody listening to this conversation, you have your terminology in your industry. So Sam Darnold, what is seeing ghosts? When a quarterback, I backed up three Hall of Famers. You know, I was mainly a backup on my career. I started a couple of years for the Patriots. So I'm going mostly on what I've just learned along the way. But by bouncing around the league, the term seeing ghosts, that's the lexicon of a quarterback. And what that means is as a quarterback, you go back and it's your job. You got to avoid looking down at the defensive line, right? We all know that. You can't look at the rush. You have to have your eyes down the field. But sometimes your vision is blocked on certain areas of the field. You can't see certain areas of the field. And so if you think that there's a player, a zone defender, let's say a flat defender out there where the helmet's blocking your vision of the left tackle, and you say, oh, well, shoot, I can't see over there. There must be a player. Well, pretty soon, or the center in PG, well, there must be a safety in the middle. You start thinking that there's 14 guys out there because you get too cautious. Well, what you have to do is say it's like a puzzle. You say, okay, if the corner and the safety and the corner are here and that linebacker, then I know by interpretation that these other players must be in these spots. And so you play that way. If you're seeing ghosts, it's you think that there's more to, you're worried about defenders who aren't there. The other way you can see ghosts is in the pocket. You're not looking. People say you feel the pass rush. Well, you don't really feel it because you're not touching anybody. You feel the football. That's what's in your hands. You feel your uniform. That's what's on your body. So you don't feel the rush. Your peripheral vision informs your mind to move up in the pocket or to the right or to the left, right? So we call that what feel in the pocket. Well, if you quote unquote feel that there's going to be a pass rusher coming in on your left side and you're moving unnecessarily, sometimes you go look at the tape. Why did I slide there? I thought that there was pressure and there was no pressure. I'm looking at the tape. There was no pressure. I'm seeing ghosts. And so that's just the vernacular of the position. And so you got a guy on the Booger McFarland was the analyst. He doesn't know that on that Monday Night Football, so he didn't explain it to anybody. And there needs to be people like me and Dan Orlovsky and other quarterbacks to say, hey, give this dude a break. Like, I'll close. Sorry, this is a long.
No, it's great. That's why we get you on.
This ghost thing bothers the hell out of me. And it would be like this. Seattle just got the Seattle Kraken. I know there's a lot of Avalanche fans that have been watching hockey a long time. I don't know my head from my elbow on a freaking hockey. But if I heard a goalie say, I'm hearing war chants. Okay? I'm hearing war chants. Well, before I just assume that the guy is losing his mind and needs a shrink, the first question I would ask is that a term? Is that terminology that hockey goalies use? Well, maybe it's that, you know, when he's guarding the near post on the puck, and he feels like there's a threat away from the near post, and so he moves over to the middle of the net and he leaves a shot open to the near, and because he was, you know. But that's just how hockey goalies talk about. So it's like you're hearing war chants because you think that there's a danger where there isn't. Well, before I go in and say, hey, this guy needs to go see a shrink, and he's a bust because he's hearing war chants, maybe I want to say, well, what do you mean when you say I'm hearing war chants? Maybe that's just part of the profession. So, at any rate, that's too long on that.
But no, it's great. This is that's why we get you on, Hugh.
Ghost talk?
Yeah,
can
well,
we
I will now.
Freaking ghost
talk? I will now. I'm not bringing it up again, man. Unless we're talking about a horror movie or something. I'm not.
Thank you.
I'm not touching it. You set me straight.
PSA, Brady, we gotta delve into PSAs, man. Public service announcement. Give Sam Darnold a break on his ghost buster routine.
Hey, Hugh. I got about a minute here. Kenneth Walker, tell me why he won't or shouldn't be a Bronco next year. They're not going to let him go, are they?
I wouldn't think so. You've got Zach Charbonnet tore his ACL. He was the backup. So Seattle would have to go and acquire somebody. The way they want to run the football with their defense and be a run-dominated team, I wouldn't think so. He's 25 years old. It took a while for that outside zone scheme to work out. Bronco fans know all about that. I was in the meeting rooms when Alex Gibbs was designing installing the outside zone. In fact, I handed Terrell Davis his very first carry as a Bronco. So, like, I understand it took a while for Seattle to get that down. Hey, you make your decision on your third step. You make your cut on your fifth step if you're going to go north with that ball. So they widened his path late in the year, and they went through a four-game stretch where they averaged 172 yards rushing. In that, they also they deepened his position, and they changed his footwork on inside zone and duo. Those are the plays that are run between the guards, and his footwork was such by deepening up, and he started his hips towards and shoulders towards the outside zone. Then he turned his hips and shoulders parallel to the line of scrimmage, which gave him the vision for the cutback or the bounce or hit it. And so then by deepening up his alignment, it gave him a little more space to see. Watches how the defense flows. And then he hits it. He's got the acceleration to run the outside zone. He's got the vision to run the inside zone. He's strong. When Charbonnet went down, he proved his merit, his worth for anybody who doubted. I didn't. I thought that might benefit Seattle that Charbonnet got hurt, because it takes us back to an old school days, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, where running backs always carried the rock 25, 30 times instead of sharing it. So I think K-9 is one of the, you know, top five backs in this league for sure, maybe even top three. And I think Seattle, as a 25-year-old, needs to re-sign him.
Yeah, I kind of had the same feeling. I had a feeling you'd go there, too. 30 seconds, Hugh. If the Broncos were in this game with a healthy Bo Nix, what's the score of the Super Bowl?
I think the Broncos probably would have played it closer. But I think Seattle was the better team. I mean, I'm not going to bore you all with all the the points against and Seattle, the number of teams that they beat that had 12 wins or more. The Seahawks objectively proved that they're the best team in the NFL. It's not close. So I think it would have been. I don't think that Sean Payton and Bo Nix would have gone through three quarters. Check this out. After three quarters, the score is, of course, 12-0. The Patriots were on a pace for 104 total yards. You've got a guy in Drake May who was the runner-up to the MVP. He had 60 yards through three quarters. We don't even need a calculator for that. He was on the pace for 80 yards through three quarters. So that's how dominant Seattle's defense was. I think it would have been similar had it been the Broncos, but I do think the Broncos would have made certainly a better showing than the Patriots.
Hugh Millen, everybody. Man, this is why we get you on. This is why we get you on the show. You're exceptional. We always say it. We got to do it again, my friend.
Oh, it's always good. Looking forward to see how Coach Mora takes those Rams. He's going to take them to heights you guys have never seen before. I love what's happening there at Colorado State.
And take us for hikes, too, right, Hugh? I used the joke, man. I got him with that.
Hey, go on a hike with them.
I'm trying.
Don't bet on a race to the top because that 64-year-old – you'll just be seeing the bottom of his boots.
Yeah, no, I'm not taking that bet. Hugh, appreciate you, my friend. Let's catch up soon.
Rock and roll, Brady.
All right,
okay, good.
Hugh,
always good to be with you.
You
okay.
Too, man. Hugh Millen, 46 minutes after the hour. Mike, let's jump out and get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hey, this is Warren Jackson, former CSU wide receiver, and you're listening to the whole show on KFK.
All right, Mike, great interview, great chat with Hugh Millen, but unfortunately, we're running out of time, so we'll be right back.
For Hall of Fame Preps Talk, listen to Coach Speak. Weekdays at 10 at Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, Ram fans, this is Ali Farokmanesh, your head men's basketball coach at Colorado State University. And you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
All right, I can't get to what we learned because Michael screwed up the clock. John Fort Collins, Brady, will CSU cover tonight their last visit to Clune Arena. Rams are minus 16.5. I don't feel comfortable with that. That's all I'm going to say.
Volcano.
That'll do it for us. Good night, Northern Colorado.